reset it here. Okay, we are going to kick off now. Good afternoon. This is the very last session of Tech Ed this year, but the good news is that there's closing drinks straight after this. We know that there's a lot of other interesting sessions in this time slot, so thank you for coming to see ours. My name's Rory. I work for Datacom in the Microsoft team. I'm the VTSP for ADFS in Auckland, and I'm an administrator for the .NET North Shore User Group. You can find us on Meetup.
Cool. Hey, my name is Thivi. I also work at Datacom as well. My team mainly focuses on building bespoke .NET applications. Recently, we've been building applications with Xamarin, so I'll be talking about that today.
The key message that we'd like you to take away from our session today: you can leverage the functionality of Office 365 on mobile devices by using the API, Xamarin, and Azure Identity. Things we're going to talk about today: we're going to see how Office 365 and Azure Active Directory coexist together. We're going to talk about the Office 365 API and show you a neat little tool that you can use. We're going to talk about Active Directory Authentication Library, or ADAL, which sits underneath the Office 365 APIs. And we're going to talk about Xamarin and how you can use that for cross-platform development. In the beginning, when Office 365 came out, there was really no way to get into the Azure Active Directory part of it. But over time, as Azure's matured, where you've got websites, you've got cloud services, you've got all the software as a service, things like Salesforce that sit behind Azure, they've opened it up so that you can go and configure all this functionality. Inside Office 365, the provisioning is reasonably limited. You can configure users and groups. You can add the users to the groups. You can set up a custom domain. You may not want to be company.onmicrosoft.com. Maybe you want to be company.co.nz. And you can do all the global administration stuff. Azure Active Directory enables you to do a whole lot more than that. So you've got Azure Active Directory Premium, which allows you to do things like customizing your login pages, password write-back. You can do more group configuration, software as a service stuff. There's more access and rights for the different kinds of applications, all the single sign-on functionality for things like WS Federation and SAML, and of course, multi-factor authentication. Inside Azure Active Directory, Office 365 is simply another software as a service. So if you look at my access panel and you find it on myapps.onmicrosoft.com, you'll see I've got Salesforce and OneDrive and Google Docs and GitHub. And on the left, you'll see the Office 365 icons, one for Exchange and one for SharePoint. But you can see there's no hierarchy there. They're all the same. They're all software as a service applications. If you go and look at the list of applications in my tenant, you'll see the ones you saw previously with the arrows. And you'll see a whole lot of other stuff. So these are my websites and my cloud service and so on. If you look on the left, you'll see the view of the users from the Azure point of view. So you'll see you've got four names. And on the right, you've got the same view of the users, but that's from the Office 365 portal. And again, you've got the same four names. So what you've got is you've got two different portals that sit on top of the same tenant and display the same data. Important to note that just because you're a user in Azure Active Directory doesn't mean that you have an Office 365 license. There's still another workflow that your administrator has to go through to give the users licenses so that they can use Office 365. So how do you merge these two portals? You can start off in Office 365. You can open up another tab and go to Azure. The old portal is managed.windowsazure.com. And you'll see that message: we're unable to find a subscription. So you can go through the wizard, put in your credit card number. You'll get a 90-day subscription. If you want, you can convert that. But if all you want to do is just play around with the backend, that's fine. Authentication's free. You won't be charged. But if you start playing with the power of Azure in your subscription, doing websites, scaling, SQL databases, you are going to be charged. So just watch out for that. The other way of doing it is to start off in Azure. and go and make yourself a new tenant, and you'll see when you go through the workflow, you'll get that pop-up or that drop-down, and it'll say, use existing directory, and then you use your Office 365 subscription. If you want to go and see how to do this, there's a very good video up on YouTube, moving your Office 365 directory and users to the portal. It's done by a guy called Plankytronics, who works for Microsoft in the UK, and he gives you a step-by-step, blow-by-blow description of how you can go and do that. We're going to talk about the Office 365 APIs, and the important word on that screen is preview. We've had three iterations of this. The third iteration came up on the 5th of August, so it's still pretty new. It's in preview. It's not complete. The documentation's wrong in cases. It's incomplete as well. And the most important thing is that the new releases break stuff. So what we had built before, some of it broke when we downloaded the new API. What it is a really good way of getting user feedback for Microsoft. So this is what we think users are going to use. Users start to use it, and then they get the feedback, and then they adjust that, and they fix it up in the next release. So the kind of things that you can do with it, you can get into Azure Active Directory and play with it. You can go onto SharePoint. You've got Exchange functionality, and there's Link functionality. Now, the documentation refers to Link, but we haven't found too many of the APIs that actually use it. If you go down a level, you can do things with your calendar, play around with your people and contacts. There's mail things you can do, and you can play around with your files. If you go and look at it in a more categorized view, you've got Active Directory, and that's got users and groups. Exchange and Outlook, it's mail, calendars, and contacts. In SharePoint, you've got all the site functionality, and you've got the client APIs. And in OneDrive, you've got OneDrive and OneDrive for Business. At the moment, only OneDrive for Business is activated. Because the back end is constantly changing, you don't want a situation where you've done a whole lot of code build, the back end changes, and it all breaks. So Microsoft have introduced the Discovery Service. You use the Discovery Service to find the location of the URLs. So that way they can change it in the back end, and your code isn't going to break. And you can use that to do files, calendars, mail. It's all standards-based. It's built on REST. It's built on OData. And it uses OAuth 2 for the authentication and for the authorization. The really neat thing about this framework is that you can swap between different resources. So we can start off on the context, do some work. We can go over to the files, for example, and do something else. Now, what we don't want is the user to have to re-authenticate because each resource needs a different set of tokens. And the way that's implemented is a thing called the Common Consent Framework. You can see we've got an application, we've got Azure Active Directory, and we've got Office 365. So you start off, the application comes up and says, do you give consent? And you say, yes, I do. Azure Active Directory will send an authentication code back, an auth code. You take the auth code, and you get the app ID and the app secret from Azure Active Directory, and I'll show you how you do that in a short while. And then what you get back is an access token and a multiple resource refresh token. You then take the token and the app secret, you send it off to your contacts, and you get back access and all the information that you've requested. So now let's say we want to go and do something with SharePoint. We don't really want to go through all this stuff again. So what happens is we take our multiple resource refresh token, we send it down to Azure Active Directory, and Azure Active Directory gives us a new access token and a new multiple resource refresh token for the resource that we've asked for, which is SharePoint. We then take that and we send it off to SharePoint, and SharePoint then gives us access to the information. The other nice thing that the multiple resource refresh token is useful for is that even if you're staying in the same resource and your token expires, you can use the multiple resource refresh token to go and get a new one. So the whole point of this is that the user is never asked to authenticate. This is all happening under the hood. It's seamless, and the user gets a really positive user experience from your application. You don't have to use these tools and these APIs. You can go do it all yourself if you really want to. But if you do that, you need to think about things like this. You need to manage all the authentication. You need to manage all the refresh tokens. You need to worry about how am I going to do all this asynchronous support. You need to construct the right URLs, get all the right queries. You need to go and manage all the cache to store all these tokens. And you have to go and configure Azure Active Directory from scratch on your own. Inside OAuth, in the input parameters that you put in, there's a thing called scopes, and these are the scopes that you can use for these APIs. So in SharePoint, you can edit and delete the user's files, you can read the user's files, you've got full control of the site collections, you've got CRUD in Exchange, full read and write access to the user's contacts, read and write access to the user's calendars, you can send mail as a user, read and write access to the user's email, and you full access to the mailbox from a user impersonation point of view. I'll explain that in a little bit later. In terms of Azure Active Directory, you've got access to the directory, you can read your directory data, you can write your directory data, and you can enable sign-on and get access to the user profiles. Now, Microsoft brought out a really neat little tool that does a lot of this work for you, and I'm going to hand over to Tivi, and he's going to walk you through it.
Cool. Thanks, Rory. So this is what we have currently for all the Office applications. So if you want to build a desktop Office application for Excel or Word, you can actually extend the current experience by building your application within the desktop application. Or you can actually build Office apps within SharePoint. With the new tools, you don't have to build applications within the current desktop or the server-side applications. You can actually bring all those features back into your mobile applications, right? So if you went to the keynote, you would remember that James showed a really neat example of integrating the flight details with the current your current calendar. You can actually do that with these set of APIs, where you can actually have access to mail, calendar, or social. You can go beyond mobile. You don't have to be stay within the mobile. So what's interesting in there is the HTML5 logo there. So part of the SDK, they also released a JavaScript SDK. You can actually use that to build AngularJS applications or Knockout.js applications. You don't have to host these applications within Windows Azure, so you're not tied to it. You can actually go beyond that, which is also AWS as well. So let's actually have a look at this tool in action. Cool. So what I'm going to show you is how easy it is to bring in all these contacts that's in Rory's account into a Windows 8 application. What I have here is Visual Studio Update 3, 2013 Update 3. I've gone ahead and already installed the tool, the API tool. You can actually download it. The link for this is at the end of the slide. Remember, Rory showed all these common consent framework where there was this really complex diagrams. Forget all that, right? You don't need any of that. So because the tools already does that for you, but it's still good to know what's going on under the hood. So the first thing is to add these Office 365 services. Once you install the tool, what you're going to see is this new menu called Connected Service. Once you click on it, it's going to pop up with Office 365 account. And the first thing you have to do is you have to register as an admin. So I'm going to use Rory's account to register as an admin. He was nice enough to give me his password. Yeah, not credit card.
Yeah, no credit card.
So once I log in, you would see in the output window that it's actually saying registering the current application. So what it's actually doing is it's going to go ahead and register the application back into the Windows Azure portal. So I do have it open, yep. So once that come back, you can see it's gone ahead and registered with that ID. So if you can see, you can actually remember EC2. So just remember the word EC2. So what I said before was we're actually going to retrieve all this contacts back. So in this case, all I want is just contact. So in your application, you can actually select the other entity as well. So click on contacts, hit permission. All I want to do is just read. I don't want any other CRUD operations. So I'm going to go read, hit apply, say OK. So there's two things that's going to happen here. It's going to go automatically and bring in all the NuGet packages that's required, and it's also going to create a sample class. So a sample class that's specific for context only. So if you select a calendar, it would also bring in another sample class for calendars as well. And in this example, we'll actually use this sample class. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag and drop some snippets. So the first thing I have here is ensure client created, right? So I am using the sample class. And the first thing, as soon as you open the app, make sure this user is logged in. Second thing, go ahead and get all the context, right? So let me drag and drop a UI code as well. So this is basically just displaying all the UI, all the context in a grid view inside Windows 8. So if I run this application, first thing it should ask is log in and also grant permission to read your current context. All right, so there you go. So it's gone ahead and automatically popped up the window. Let's give it a few seconds. So I was already logged in before, so it's remembered my account. So at the same time, if there is another app, it will also remember the login details from before as well. So all you have to do now is grant this application to read your current context. So you can say yes or no. In our case, we'll say OK. Give it a few seconds. It should come back with a set of context. There it is. Cool. So these are the same contacts that we saw in the Office 365 portal. So if I go back to the Windows Azure portal, go into my Active Directory and applications, just quickly show you the demo. There it is. So that's the app that got registered right now, and it got registered as a native application. If I click on it, configure. I like the spinning logo. There it is. So it's the same ID, EC2, if you remember. Right, if I go back down and the Office 365 Exchange permissions, it's given the exact same permission here as well. Cool? So that's just a simple demo. So if I switch back. So what's next? Obviously, it's still not complete. It's still in a preview. So there are more APIs that are missing, things like Task and Office Graph. More SDKs coming soon. So if you're a native iOS developer, there's a native iOS SDK on the way. Android and Windows Phone and Windows 8, they're all available at the moment. Cool. So Rory will talk about ADEL.
Thanks, Timmy. That's a pretty neat tool, and it does a whole lot of stuff for you. So Active Directory Authentication Library, or ADEL for short. Version 2 GA'd on Sunday, so it's hot off the press. ADEL for Net version 2 only works with .NET 4.5, and it does not support ACS. So if you've ever played with Azure, you'll know that ACS is the framework that allows you to do all the social logons, the Facebooks, the Yahoos, the Googles, and the Windows Live accounts. It's become the Microsoft standard for accessing the APIs. It's used for the Graph API. It's used for this Office 365 API. It's used for the management APIs in Azure. So those are the ones that allow you to run up VMs, run up websites, scale websites, do all that programmatically. And it's also the one that's used by Intune. The other good thing about it is that the whole ADEL library is completely open source. And if you're interested, you can go and look at it all on GitHub. Three main ways of using it. You've got a client application accessing a remote resource. You've got a server application accessing a remote resource like Office 365. Or you've got a server application accessing a remote resource, but on behalf of the user. And that's where that user impersonation comes from that I showed you earlier. It used to be called Azure Authentication Library, sorry, but with ADFS Server 2012 R2, some OAuth functionality has made it into ADFS. At the moment, it only supports the authorization code grant and not the other two. But because we now have on-premise and in the cloud, they changed the name to Active Directory Authentication Library. That's the mission statement that they've tried to live up to. ADEL is a library meant to help developers to take advantage of Active Directory for enabling client applications to access protected resources. And I think they've met that mission statement pretty well. If you look at a schematic of Windows Azure Active Directory, you see on the left we've got the portals we talk about. There's some PowerShell. There's some sync coming in. But down there you'll see the REST interfaces, and that's what we need for these APIs. And down the bottom, you'll see all the public interfaces that we use for Federation, things like WS Federation, things like SAML. And over there, you'll see OAuth, so that it's a mixture of REST and OAuth. In terms of the endpoints, each application has a full set, and you can see the button at the bottom. There's a Graph API endpoint to go and get users in the context. There's an authorization endpoint where you start off the process, you get a token, hand the token off to the token endpoint, and you get your access. So if you look at that in a bit more diagrammatically, we start off with OAuth. We say, please give me the token. We get the token. We take the token. We pass it off in the REST call, and we get access to the resource. You want to look at it a little bit more schematically. On the left, you've got the application. On the right, you've got Azure Active Directory. We start off. We say, please give me a JWT token. It's a JSON web token. We get back the authentication token, put that in the message, send it back to the resource, and we get the data back. And that's typically the way that most of those ADEL flows work. If you go and look at where we get all the parameters from and how we actually code this, we start off with, as Tivi showed you, you saw the client ID, so you put the client ID into your client ID field there. You've then got your authority, so something.onmicrosoft.com, and you put up there in your tenant name. And then you get your URI. The URI can be anything. It's not a URL, and you put it into there. And then you'll see you use that in the following call. So you've got authentication context, and you'll see you've got authentication context with the authority, and the authority is your tenant name. What it comes back with is an authentication result. So when you see authentication context and authentication result, that tells you that you're looking at ADEL, because that is the typical ADEL signature. And there's a whole range of methods to get tokens, and they all start with acquire token something. So in this case, we're acquiring token async. So the problem is, you saw in that code, you needed your tenant name in the endpoint. So you need that. But how would you write something like the Office 365 API tool? Because at that point, you don't know what the tenant's going to be. How do you write a multi-tenant application? Because there could be many different people on many different tenants logging in. And the answer is you use the common endpoint. The common endpoint gives you enough context to get you to the point that you can log in. Once you've logged in, they know what your tenant is, and they can flesh out the rest of the context with the details of your particular tenant. If you have a quick look at some code, this is just playing around with the multiple resource refresh token. We start off, you can see it's acquire token by authorization code in this case. Is it a multiple resource refresh token? Yes, it is. Pass it in and say acquire token by refresh token. So that's another typical way of doing ADEL. All right, when we went through the tool demo, Tivi showed you the class that's generated for context. Let's go and look at that in the users and groups code. The code is all pretty similar between all the samples. So we start off again with get users, and the first thing you see is ensure client created, and that's exactly the same code that you saw earlier in Tivi's demo. We then go off to ensure client created, and we're going to use this discovery context that I mentioned earlier. Let's go and find out where things are. So let's get the discovery context. The service resource ID is the ID of the whatever resource we want to get. And at that point, ADEL jumps in and forces you to authenticate. So all the user flows, the logins, your name, your password, etc., is all handled at that point. Now you've logged in. Okay, you come down to the somewhat convoluted code, which I'm not going to go through in great detail. But what we really want is a graph client object. And again, we see another acquire token method. All right, so we've called ensure client created. What we've got back is an AAD graph client object. That's a really big object. It's got a whole ton of stuff about what's in Azure Active Directory. It's got applications, context, devices, all kinds of things. So let's go and maybe filter it down a little bit. Let's go and say, well, we just want the type by user. And you'll see what it returns is a paged collection. Because there could be hundreds of users, and we don't want all the users at once. So what it returns is 50 at a time. You saw in my previous slide where we looked at the users, there's only four of them. So we've only got four in the page. We then make a list. We say, get the users from the page. So now we've got the four users. Get next page async is going to return null because there are no new pages. So we're going to come out the loop, and we're going to return to the call with that list of four users. Tivi's going to talk to you about Xamarin now, so I'm going to hand over to him.
Thank you. Thanks, Rory. So we've had a look at the APIs and the tools, and now let's actually have a look at how we can build a cross-platform mobile application using Xamarin. So say, for example, your company wants to build an iOS application. What does your manager do? First thing he does, he goes and spins up a new team with a whole bunch of iOS developers, create the app, you submit to the App Store, you're number one, you're doing really well, and everything is awesome. A few months down the track, Android comes along, takes the world over by storm. All of a sudden, 80% of all Android devices, or all devices, are running Android now. So what does the manager do? He comes down, asks all the iOS developers, guys, let's build the same application on Android. What does the iOS developers say? They say, no, we can't do that. It's Java, it's Google, we're not allowed to touch that, and they're going to get all emotional. So what does your manager do? He goes and spins up a new team, starts a Java team, releases the app to the marketplace, everything is fine. A few months down the track, Windows comes along, and Windows Phone comes along. Same story, manager spins up a new team, submits the app to the marketplace. As you can see, you actually have three awesome apps in the marketplace. But it is one of the most expensive approach. At the same time, it is the most commonly used approach as well. So what's your manager going to ask to cut down the cost? He's going to come to the team and ask, guys, is there a way where you can write code once and it's going to run on all billion devices? What does the developer say? Yes, we can. Right? It's called hybrid applications, right? How does this work? You write HTML and JavaScript just as you would do for web applications. You chuck it into this big black box. And depending on what button you're pressing, you're going to get different applications, right? So for iOS, you're going to get iPhone application. For Android, you're going to get Android application. And for Windows, you'll get Windows. The problem with this, though, is you only get this black box only exposes a common denominator API that's across all three platforms. Right, so APIs that's like accelerometer or GPS. You can't really take advantage of platform-specific features. For example, iOS has really nice built-in UI animations. Android has a feature for widgets. Windows and Windows Phone 8 has Metro UI. You can't really take advantage of any of these applications. This is not my favorite approach. Mainly because of the performance, right? Think of hybrid applications as this soda fountain, like a drink from a soda fountain. Native applications as drink from Coke bottle. What do you do when you go up to a soda fountain? You press Coke button to get Coke. You press Fanta to get Fanta, just as you would do for this hybrid diagram I showed you before. If you taste Coke bottle, a drink from a Coke bottle and a soda fountain, they don't taste nothing at all. Same at all. We're stuck in the same world for mobile applications as well. Users expect really, really rich experience for mobile applications, right? The moment you download an application, doesn't matter whether it's free or paid, they expect very, very high performance. If it crashes or performs really bad, they're going to start sending you threatening emails like, give me my money back. If you want to know about this experience, talk to Atta. He's been through that. And he's done a session on this. And yeah, you can see the email that he got with how many F words it has. Right? Best example is Facebook. Right? When Facebook first launched, they were native. When HTML5 was taking off, Facebook was one of the first ones to say, we're going to change all our applications into hybrid applications. And they went ahead. And look what happened to their rating. Went all the way down to 2. This is really bad because Facebook is one of the biggest brands in the world. They changed their strategy, said, no, we're going back to native. they launched the app again. Their rating went all the way up to four. Facebook is just one of the examples. You would actually find more and more apps actually converting from hybrid to native. So if native is the way to go forward, and if you want to reduce cost and share as much as you can, share code as much as you can, then what are the tools that's there? For C-sharp developers or Microsoft developers, the best option for now is Xamarin. Xamarin takes a different approach. You share code as much as you can in the shared project at the top. So you would share code like accessing web services or having your business logic or even storing local data. What you then do is you write your UI code using C# for iOS. You write Android using C#. At the same time, Windows and Windows Phone is already given, which is within Visual Studio. All you have to do is reference this C# code, this shared project. The best thing about Xamarin is it has 100% API coverage, so you're not just limited to any common denominator API. At the same time, you can actually build iOS applications from Visual Studio. That's the best thing ever, right? You don't have to use Visual Studio. Part of the license, Xamarin also ships an IDE called Xamarin Studio. It's actually free. And you can use this IDE in Windows or Mac. So let me show you this application that we built to show this end-to-end demo. What we thought is maybe we should build a ticket session app for the last session. Probably not useful anymore, but but just to show the app. So what we did is we built two UI apps, which is a Windows 8 app and a Android app. So what this app does is it gives you a list of all the ticket sessions, color-coded based on the levels. You can search for a session. You can tap on the session. You can get more detail of that session. If you really like that session, you can add that to your calendar, Office 365 calendar. At the same time, you also get a set of contacts from the Office 365. Which is the example that we looked at before. So you can actually click on a certain person and invite them to the same session. Would have been useful if we launched this earlier, but yeah. So let's actually have a look at this demo. Yeah, so before I go in, as you can see, Rory is free for the whole day. There's nothing on his calendar. So what I have here is, let me run this quickly so you can zoom in. No, you can't see it. Yeah. Cool. So I have three UI projects here, or two UI projects. The first one is Ticket Android, so that's the Android project. The second one is the Windows 8 project. And the middle one is a share project. That's actually a reference to both Android and Windows 8. So if I go to the references, this is where you can see the Ticket shared project, right? So it's the same thing in Windows as well. I've referenced the same project here. So if I expand the share project, I've actually broken this down into different modules. So one is for services. So services is where I go ahead and access all my sessions. The other one is all my CRUD operations for Office 365. So I've wrapped them all in different modules. Inside presentation, I have two screens. So the first screen is my home screen. As soon as you come in, you see all the sessions. And once you tap on a session, you see the details of that session. That's where for the second screen is for, right? And after that, you have all the DTOs and all the sessions that gets returned back. So let me run the Windows 8 application first. There we go. So if I run this, give it a few seconds. So first thing I force this app to, you have to log into Office 365. So before I've already logged in, like I said, and this will automatically remember the same credentials. And you can see this app requires you to expose all the contacts as read-only and have full access to your calendar. So we need full access because we should be able to add to your calendar. So once I hit OK, this should pop up all the sessions. There we go. So I can actually search my session. There it is. Give it a few seconds, it's going to bring in all the contacts. So that's the session I like, and that's the session I want to go to. So I'm going to invite myself. And this is, remember, this is Rory's account, so This will add to Rory's account, and at the same time, it should invite me, which is a Gmail account. So once I hit add, there it is. It's successfully added. Oh, that's right. Yes, it's giving me. There we go. So that's actually Office 365 giving me that little alert. So that's added automatically to Office, Rory's account. And if I go to my Gmail, there should be an invite from Rory. There it is, right? So that's the same calendar being it. So I can actually accept or reject his invite if he doesn't want to. So same flow happens to Android as well. So I'll quickly run it, but not go through all of it. Setup, startup project. So run the Android. So my Android application is actually going to run inside the emulator. So there you go. So same sort of style as Windows 8. I could search for the session. Oh, there's an exception. Okay, I won't go through that, but yeah, it's probably network issue.
Definitely network
issue. Trust me, yeah, trust me, it was working. I can run it actually. No, I won't. Could try, give me a second, just quickly, there you go. Give it a few seconds. There we go. It was network. Awesome, right?
Awesome, so recovery from
network. Yeah, so I want to add this through, so it will do the flow, same flow. Just quickly, though, before I said it brings in three NuGet packages when you first add the Office 365 services. So if I go to Manage NuGet Package, what you will see is there's actually four. So there's one for Xamarin, and there's another one for Windows. So the actual authentication part of it is different to Xamarin and Windows. So the way you would actually code this inside a share project is by adding conditional attributes. So if I go into my Office 365 services, you can see I have two different code, for one for Windows app and the other one for Xamarin. So the way you would do it is add a conditional attribute, and you can actually switch between them and to see which one is active and how they compile. If you want to add a new conditional attribute, you can go to the target project, select properties, and there it is, right? So as soon as you add to the conditional attribute, you can actually target them inside a share project. In real world, obviously, our clients always change requirements halfway through the project. Right, so same thing has happened here. Tiago has called me up and said, change all the orange color to yellow color. Right, so he doesn't like the color orange, so we're going to change it to yellow. So basically, I want to show the example of change in one place reflecting two different UIs. Right, so luckily, I have coded all that in a method called apply sessions, which sits inside the shared code. So if I scroll down, I've colored all the 300 label sessions as orange. If I set all of them to yellow and run this on Android, you should see the same. You should see all the orange reflected as or changed to yellow. There it is, right? So without making any change, I'll go and run Windows 8 application. All the orange should have changed to yellow, right? So this is the shared code part of it. Obviously, it's going to ask me to approve first. Once I hit approve, there it is. Cool. So change in one place, change across all the other mobile platforms as well. So obviously, I ran through this pretty fast for the Xamarin section. This is Office 365 session, so I didn't really want to go too deep into Xamarin. If you have any questions about Xamarin, come talk to me or have a look at a few other sessions, actually, about Xamarin. Cool. I'll hand over to Rory to wrap up.
Thanks, Tivi. That's a pretty cool demo. So when you think about the title of the session, it was a mobile journey. And I think that's what you saw in that demo. You saw from Xamarin through Azure to Office 365. Once again, the key message that we'd like for you to take away from this session. Related content that you may have already seen. There was a session earlier today on Xamarin, and there was one on Azure Active Directory, but that was more from a DevOps IT pro point of view. Well, find us afterwards. We'll be down at the closing drinks. Resources, there's a really good resource there, dev.office.com. There's a ton of stuff there, ton of documentation. Go and have a look. There's a link to the preview for the tool that Tivi talked about earlier. Go and download it. Microsoft Virtual Academy actually has a course on Office 365 development. Go and watch it. I highly recommend it if you want to play around with the stuff. And down the bottom, we've got the two Xamarin links, getting started with Xamarin and Xamarin University. Where do you want to go from here? Well, once again, there's the dev.office.com. There's a whole pile of code samples that you can go and play with and see how it all fits together. There's a patterns and practices section. You can see the best way to do things. Ask SharePoint and Ask Office. There's places you can go and ask for answers and get some really good help. And really, the bottom one is important. So have a play, give Microsoft your feedback, and help determine the next version of the preview. In terms of resources, obviously the Microsoft Virtual Academy that I've already spoken about. There's some virtual labs you can play with. TechNet and MSDN Flash, these are very New Zealand-centric. They've got stuff about code camps and dev camps and seminars and things. If you're not subscribed already, I strongly recommend that you do and get have a look at it. And of course, Channel 9 and all in this session and all the other sessions from TechEd this year will be up there shortly. Please complete your session evaluations. There's some really neat prizes that you can win there. Well, that's the end of TechEd New Zealand 2014. Go downstairs, grab a cold one, chill out, enjoy yourselves, and thank you.